Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop and trust your intuition. Through the wonderful array of guests we have on the show and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I'm your host for this podcast. And today we have got a very special guest on. Now, what I really liked about Deb was that she is helping people that, sometimes you'll be sort of pushed to the side. People that have actually created issues and need help on how to rectify that. Now, I have met many people that have had partners that have betrayed them, but you always feel sorry for the person that's being betrayed. But Deborah's helping those that have been doing the betrayal because they also need to heal and sort through what they're doing. And she's got a fantastic book on. We're going to talk all about that. But before we go any further, make sure you share, subscribe or like the podcast so everyone can get an understanding of how it is to really connect with their intuition and live a very intuitive life. But with no further ado, we want to welcome Deborah onto the show. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, thank you, Susan. I'm glad to be here from the United States. I'm far away.
Yes, you are in Pennsylvania, aren't you?
Yes, yes.
Yes, and I'm on the Gold Coast in Queensland, Australia.
So. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yes. So the first thing I want to do is I'm going to ask you how you got from where you are to where you are, from where you were to where you are, I should say. But the other aspect I want to ask is, no, let's ask that first. How did you get to where you are? Because that'll be my next question.
In terms of writing this book and trying to reach out to those that...
Just a bit about your life.
Oh,
because
life. Okay.
I was writing that book. That's more now. How did you I get see. To me now?
Okay. Well, I started many years ago as a teacher, special education teacher, working with back then they called it behavior disordered teenagers and learning disabled. And I wasn't very good at the academics. And I realized I really needed to work with more of the social emotional piece of that. And I started really identify with those kids struggling with issues and at risk youth. So I got my master's and then and ultimately my doctorate. And I got to do a lot of great work in schools, training teachers how to reach kids and connect, as well as the students themselves and their parents. And I got to go speak in many places about mental health and how to reach kids. And then as my private practice developed and working as a therapist, I just stumbled upon more of a Gestalt training, which I always identified myself as that. And Gestalt is a training that really focuses on awareness, experience, noticing yourself, and not so much about the data that you're talking about or the story, but how you feel about it, what comes up for you, except the intuitive part of you. And that kind of moved me more into couples work. And I discovered the necessity of balance, of how to balance both people in a relationship for them to realize that the focus of healing is their relationship, not always them individually. Of course, there's individual work necessary, but when a couple would come into my office, it was about that. And but along the way, personally, I moved from many states throughout the United States. And now I've landed in Pennsylvania as a caboose. I follow my kids and grandkids. And so, so we've been here a couple years. And through the miracle of pickleball, I figured out how to connect with a new community of people. And that's been fun. But it is a transition. And during COVID, which was very traumatic for most of us, I was in St. Louis at that time, pretty isolated, and gave myself the gave myself the energy to focus on this book I've been writing for years. It was kind of the family joke. Yeah, how's that book coming, Deb? And yeah. I mean, years I've been writing this book. And finally, I did it during that isolation time. And it was energizing and fun and it felt really great. And I stumbled on wonderful mentors and editors because this was a new world for me on how to get a book out there. So then we moved here and then that finalized the book and got it launched. And as I tried to figure out in this phase of life, as I have a few clients virtually, but more about just spreading the word. And I find that podcasts are a great way to kind of talk about the necessity to see us all as humans and that we're all flawed and that we all need growth and forgiveness can happen and growth can happen. And so that's where I'm at now.
I love that because, again, it's so easy to sort of condemn somebody for doing something wrong that it's really hard to look at that flip side. And we all do things wrong. We are all flawed. We all have our little hang-ups and our little ways of doing things that may not suit everybody. So I love that that's where you've sort of focused. And I also get how long it's taken to write the book because it took me probably... I don't know, 3 or 4 years to write mine too. Mm-hmm. So yes, I really do get that. And it is a whole new world when you're stepping out. But as the listeners will get this understanding is we are talking about your book because I just love who it is targeted to. And even though it is targeted to the betrayer, the person that has created, well, not necessarily created the issue, but who has done that, it just is so important for all of us to get that understanding because we can dish them so quickly. We can sort of go, well, they're the ones that are wrong. They're the ones that have done something wrong. But in a relationship, there's always two people. Mm-hmm. And we need to be really, really mindful of that. So, okay, so you've got to where you've got to the book. Now, you don't have to answer this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
Are you writing from experience or are you writing from observation?
Yes, more from observation. In my office, the couples would come in trying to deal with repair after infidelity. And it was understanding the person that was betrayed needed to vent and scream and yell and cry and ask why over and over again. And the person that was the betrayer, the cheater, the adulterer, was often just silent, just sat there mutely, you know, head between their knees, kind of just being inadequate in terms of expressing how they were feeling or their response to the question of why. And so, yes, it helped the person who had been cheated on to feel supported and heard, perhaps. But it didn't help their relationship. And I realized that for true healing to happen, both parties need to have some work done. And so sadly, the person that cheated probably needed some individual work because they had never told their story. They had never really told what happened because it is such a shame game. It is such a culturally looked down upon thing to cheat on your partner. The recognition that it was just going to be stuck. There was no way to move this forward unless the person who cheated had some tools in order to examine themselves. I call it navel gazing, how to look at themselves and ask themselves, why? Why did I step over the line? And the answer to why is going to be one that evolves over time. You know, we as we self-actualize, as we grow in our awareness of ourselves, we're going to have a different perspective. So when you ask a person who's cheated and just got caught last week, why, the answer is going to be so different than what they say a year later or 5 years later or 20 years later. But the point of my book is you have to continually ask yourself why, because this is a big deal that you violated someone's trust and hurt them. Because step one in the book of the 5 steps is empathy. How do you really connect and get how much pain you've caused those around you, as well as empathy for yourself, that you have totally flipped perhaps your own self-perception and maybe gone against who you think you are.
What I want to ask, Deborah, before we go into that, because the book does have the five steps, and I want to brush over them just quietly so people can, not just quietly, you know what I mean. I wanted to go over those five steps because I think it's really interesting and people can get a really good understanding of it when they purchase the book, but just to give them that brief overview. Yeah. But before we go there, betrayal is not really objective, it's more subjective, isn't it? It is actually betrayal. For somebody to feel betrayed doesn't necessarily mean that their partner has gone off with another person. There's because we have the internet now, there's lots of other ways of betrayal. And I would like you, if you wouldn't mind, just to go a little bit deeper into that side of it, because I know there'll be women, people, because I know men as well who feel that they've been betrayed. But I know that there's people out there that are going to feel like they're being betrayed because of things that are happening right in front of them. Yeah. And when I'm saying that, I'm talking about the internet, I'm talking about social media, I'm talking about that side of it. Can you give us a bit more of a rundown on what betrayal is and what it looks like?
Well, an affair is a secret relationship. It's when you connect with someone and your significant other has no clue, has no idea, is not okay with it. You know, there are polyamorous relationships where both parties agree that another partner can be included in their relationship. That is not an affair. That is not cheating, because it's out in the open, it's discussed, it's agreed upon. And so that's the betrayal. But the betrayal, yes, we certainly think of cheating, and certainly online relationships that may not be physical. They just may be emotional or, again, a secret. It can still hurt. So betrayal is have you wounded the other person, that they don't trust you anymore, that they are suspicious of what your intentions or your actions are. But, you know, you think of other little betrayals would be gossiping. You know, if I gossip about you behind your back and you hear about that, your significant others told a story about you that you didn't want shared, that's a betrayal. Because it wounds you. It hurt. It's, you haven't given permission for that story to be out. So that's another example of betrayal.
Yeah. So in all, when we look at it in the bigger picture, betrayal can be, like you say, it's usually a secret, and it's what it's doing. It's hurting somebody.
Right.
Yeah. It's hurting your significant other.
Exactly. And the challenge is to get it, to get that you've hurt the other person. Yeah, intellectually, we know we hurt the other person, but to really feel it, to really feel their pain is a skill. Empathy is a skill. Intuition is a skill of how to be aware of yourself and aware of others, and aware of yourself, not only intellectually, but emotionally. And that's the challenge. We live in such a culture, at least here in the States, it so values the cognitive and intellectualizing of information. And we kind of minimize or try to calm people down when they express too much emotion. And yet our emotion is so powerful, it's so strong, and it's so authentic, typically, about what we're actually experiencing. And so the ability to understand the other person, feelings, heart, to understand their heart is necessary and yet challenging, because if I've hurt you and you come at me and tell me how much I've hurt you, my first instinct is to defend myself. I may feel like I'm attacked, even though I'm guilty, but if I feel like I have to protect my ego, I have to yes but you, I have to minimize it, deflect, deny, you know, all those defense mechanisms that we're all so innately excellent at. And so that's the other part of your self-awareness, is to notice your own defense mechanisms and when they've kicked in and when they're blocking connection, when they're blocking connection with others and blocking connection with yourself, in an honest way.
Right. Oh, well, that's really interesting. And again, it's giving that empathy to the other person as well, even though they have done things that you don't feel is comfortable with them. Again, two sides to every story, and there's two people in a relationship. Yeah. So it's not just attacking. And yes, I'd want to know why. I mean, it's never happened to me. Yeah. I'm very, very grateful that it's not happened to me. Mm-hmm. But I do know many that have done that. And the first thing I would do is go, why? I would feel like I would be attacking in saying that, because it's like, for goodness sake, I want to know why. What have I done wrong? What's happening? What's gone wrong?
Yes.
So it is an attack type of thing. Yeah. So I would understand the other person trying to defend or going through that with that. But I will get back into your book now, because I want to really get stuck into that side of it. So I'll put the little ticker tape on.
Thank you.
Before we go any further. Now, if you want to connect with Deb, it is Dr. Deb Miller. Now, her website is DR as in doctor, Deb as in D-E-B, and then Miller as in M-I-L-L-E-R. So Dr. DR, Deb, D-E-B, Miller, MILLER.com. So you can connect with Deb on that one. I am going to put the new little ticker tape up, which is all about the book, and it is called More Than Sorry, and it's 5 steps to deepen your apology after you have committed infidelity. And it is available on Amazon. And we're going to go into that a little bit more. Now, on my podcast, I don't sit and talk about books, because I know a lot of the people that have come on do have books. But I find that the way you have put this book together is so well done that it needs to be talked about. I really feel it needs to be talked about. So I'm more than happy to put this out there. So 5 steps. Where do we start, Deb?
Yes. Well, we've kind of alluded to it. I mean, the step one is empathy, which I can talk more about later. You know, empathy for others and developing, learning that skill of sensing what the other person is feeling, and then finding the skills to actually articulate it. And that takes practice. And step two is the self-awareness, self-discovery, navel gazing. I have a whole lot of pieces under that that helps you look not only at your attachment style, your defense mechanisms, and a little bit about the brain and sex and how your brain may have kicked in and clouded your good decision-making, who knows? Your moral code, all those things. It's a long, long step. It's a long step. Because it's lifelong, right? Yes. And then step three is saying it out loud. Again, the definition of affair is the secrecy. So in order to break through and to find awareness, to find the skills, the strength, the courage to look at your indiscretions honestly, you have to say it out loud to someone. And in the perfect world, as a therapist, you find a therapist, but it's expensive and it's hard to, necessarily connect with the right person. So if you find one friend in your life who'll listen to you without too much criticism and judgment, you know, you just have to say it out loud, because that's the irony. People haven't told their story, and because it's such a shame game. And then step four is to ask for forgiveness. Step four is restitution goals. Notice I'm looking at my steps because I've written this so long ago. The step four is restitution goals. You know, how can I improve myself? What is it that I need to do? And set, small measurable goals of how you're going to connect differently with people, et cetera. And then the last piece that leads up to the end is, how do you ask for forgiveness? What, in response to the why did you do it? You have a responsibility as the violator to try to answer it. And the why is a reflection of your own work. It's a reflection of your self-analysis. You're going to ask yourself, and kind of self-analyze yourself. Here's my best guess. And that's the truth. You're going to be making guesses about why you chose to do what you do. And you're going to keep processing that out loud with other people so that you get more clarity and growth. Because the goal is not to repeat it. We can't fix the past, but we hope to have a better future. And we hope to all have what we want is intimacy, something to be close to someone else, to feel like we have a partner. And so how you do that, you have to write a really sincere letter or verbally say, I'm sorry, because that's what I saw in my office all the time. In response to why did you cheat? Why did you have an affair? I don't know. I don't know. I won't do it again. Why do we have to keep talking about it? You know, because it's so uncomfortable because they don't have the words, the awareness of their why. And so that's the challenge. And of course, just like, you know, if you had a child and they broke a window and you say, why'd you break the window? They're going to give you an answer just to get you to quit talking about it. And so mm-hmm. this is to try to help someone look at it. So it takes a lot of courage and a lot of humility to face your own transgressions and to really authentically own up to what you've done and how you've hurt others. But the other piece of this is there was something that you may have gained from your secret relationship. What did you learn about yourself? What did you like about yourself in that relationship? What did you find that you needed in pursuing this outside party? I mean, there may be some pieces that you need to embrace and take with you. And that's hard to process with your significant other because they don't want to hear it. They want you to demonize, of course, the person you had the affair with. Mm. But the person that cheated needs to really look at that, you know, because they got attached probably to the party that they had the affair with. And so they need to examine what it is that was good about that relationship and if there was pieces that were good.
Wow. That's a...
I know, sorry.
It's quite step and all of a sudden it's gone blown out. But yes, I do get that. One of the things I want to ask, Deborah, is when you're talking about these five steps, and I do know that when you're doing things like that, they sort of run in line, but then they circle back, don't they? So mm-hmm. you're talking about empathy and getting an understanding. So, all right, let's start with step one. Step one's empathy and understanding. When you're talking about empathy, are you talking about empathy for the person that you have betrayed, the person you have had the betrayal with, or yourself?
All of the above, yes. And that's tough because, you know, we all have different ways of us operating. You know, some of us are big thinkers, some of us are big feelers, some of us are big doers. And so those that aren't big feelers, for them to get that empathy, that get that sense, to get that vocabulary, that's challenging. You know, like, how you feel today? Good. You know, what does good mean? You know, and so there's a learning curve to all of that, of how to express yourself. And so that's challenging because obviously some people are more extroverted, some people are more introverted, some people just can't connect with their inner sense of self. And so that's the long-term work of how to do that. But empathy means I own it. I own how I hurt you. And there's a difference. And I want people who have hurt others to feel guilt. Guilt says, I messed up, I own it, and I take responsibility and I will do better. Shame, on the other hand, is I screwed up and I always screw up because I am a screw up. That is not growth enhancing. That is not going to lead you into intimacy, connection, relationship. And where does shame come from? Sometimes it's from childhood messages, which is sad. And that may take a lot of therapeutic work to break through of owning that you can, and that's the other piece of my book. There's a duality, a dichotomy to all of us. We can be good and we can be bad. We can be faithful and we can cheat. We can be sincere and we can lie. I mean, the reality is we're not either or. And so the goal is that we catch ourselves when we're not aligning with how we want to be, how we want to connect with ourselves and others.
Okay, yeah, that, and I like that because we do, you know, it's easy to point the fingers and judge at somebody, but we are all, you know, we all have a bit of everything in us. It's definitely the yin and the yang of it all. So we need to let some of it go. And I love how you've explained guilt and shame. It's because people have sort of said, oh, you know, you're not supposed to feel guilty and worry. And it's like, well, you know, that's not, if I've done something wrong, I want to feel guilty because I need to get an understanding of what it's about and how to go forward with it. I don't want to sit in it, but I also want to learn from it and move forward. So that's
Well,
really important.
yeah, and there's a you've got to have some hopefulness because this
Yes.
is you feel you as the betrayer can feel so beat up. You know, people are finger pointing at you. People now look at you differently if they find out. And there's just this shame, you know, guilt. You're walking around with the big red A on your back all the time. And so to feel hopeless kind of comes with the territory. And yet to feel hopeless means you're not going to do the work to go grow. And so that's the challenge, is to accept that, yeah, you messed up. And yes, there's restitution. Yes, there is change. Yes, there's evolution in who you can be. You know, because some people believe, you know, once a cheater, always a cheater. You know, they're never going to change, et cetera, et cetera. And that can be true if they don't do the work. If they don't actually examine what happened and own up for what they did.
Yes, that was the other area I was heading to too, because even if the relationship itself doesn't stay together, it's not a waste of time because you are learning more about yourself, you're getting a better understanding of what you want in life and what you're looking for, and you can take that forward to a new relationship in a better context.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I mean, that's the you can't guarantee that if you do the work, your relationship is going to be repaired. It still is a choice. It's a choice of your significant other if they're going to forgive you. And through the work, you may realize you really don't want to go back to that relationship. You know, you want to start over. And that's okay. You know, again, that has to be their own decision and their own choice. But to really encourage them to take the steps to look humbly in the mirror and figure out how to make sure it doesn't happen again, how to be more open and honest.
And the other aspect too on all of that, Deb, is the fact that not only have you hurt your significant other, you've actually involved another person too, and you're more than likely hurting them as well.
Right. And that's I don't even go there in my book because that's so complicated. It must be, you know, that person then I call them the other, is totally cut out of this work because for you to go for the violator, the cheater, to then reconnect with the other and talk about saying goodbye. I mean, certainly they need to talk about if they've said goodbye to that person, but yet they have to let go of being responsible for how a person feels and how they recover from losing this relationship. It's just tragic. It's, you know, there's so many people hurt. And then, you know, there's fa other family members that may or may not even know what happened. You know, that's the other issue. They may or may not know. They may know that there's something going on, but they don't know what it is.
Yeah, there's a lot of relationships rebuilding and mending after that sort of situation. So I can re totally understand why they do need to help. I had a situation, and I know I was being judgmental too, where a friend of mine found out her partner had or husband had had an affair. It was only a one night stand, but still. And I found it hard to look at him. I judged him. I found it hard to treat him the same way. And I could see, being so intuitive, I could see he was in a lot of pain. He was in a lot of pain because of what he's done. He was really feeling what he had done. And it was just too much alcohol, too much party, you know, a one night fling thing, not really intentional, not sort of really organized. And yeah, and it was devastating. But their marriage stayed together. It was lovely to watch them rebuild it. And as they rebuilt, my feelings for them actually grew and developed. I could look at them in a way of saying, oh my goodness, he has done so much work to get where he is. Mm-hmm. I take my hat off to him, you know, good on you, well done. And mm-hmm. I would never ever expect him to do that again. It was a big lesson for him and mm-hmm. a big lesson for her. Mm-hmm. And she went through her stuff too, and she sort of went, I need to look at this more and I need to be more aware of that. So it was a lovely ability for them to grow as a couple.
That's great. And
yeah, and so I could look at them differently. So this sort of work is really, really important. And if you're you don't want to go to a counselor, if you're not ready to do that,
yeah,
get the book, an understanding, start those steps. So we've looked at empathy, that was step one. Now we want to just quickly brush over a little bit more about self. I don't know if I wrote it down right, sorry.
That's all right. I call it navel gazing. You know, and so it's just kind of, you know, asking yourself why, you know, almost every day wake up and go, now why today, how will I answer the question of why? And that kind of journaling, meditation, focusing, etc. But then I have some little quizzes or little self questionnaires about your moral inventory. Do you have a sense of right and wrong? And this was where intuition comes in. Did you know you were stepping over the line? You know, where was that in your heart? You know, how did you feel about saying goodbye to your family in the morning and going to meet up with your affair partner in the evening? I mean, what was that like for you? And how did that affect your moral code? Because there are a lot of people that, again, who in affairs have one persona where they're like the perfect parent, you know, family, community member, et cetera, but they are having an outside relationship. So looking at their moral code, personality style, I mentioned being extrovert, introvert, you know, whether you're emotional or more intellectual, cognitive, and looking at your defense mechanisms, you know, really acknowledging, because most people don't do this work until they got caught.
Yes.
Right. And so, and initially when first confronted, they're going to deny it. Or, you know, hopefully they don't project it like, well, if you would have paid more attention to me anyway, just for them to look at all the different styles of defense mechanisms that they may have engaged in order to just look in the mirror and feel okay about who they are and the choice that they're making. And believe me, we are all really good at that. Mm-hmm. Sadly, we're not taught that, but you know, it's just really, kind of a natural way of just saying, staying grounded and being okay when we look in the mirror. You know, yeah, maybe I hurt them, but I gave a lot of money to church, or yes, but I work really hard, you know, cleaned up the yard next door, you know, whatever it is that we do.
It's deflecting, isn't it?
Deflecting. And then relationship style, just kind of looking at your pattern of relationships you've had over the years with other people. You know, did you always stay committed? What's your attitude? Do you really believe in monogamy? Do you feel like cheating's inevitable and that, you know, everybody's going to do it? You know, just kind of getting them to kind of think about, say it out loud again, what their head was doing that helped them stay in the relationship, or perhaps even though they may have had just one night stands or online relationships. And then looking at their coping mechanisms, how are you dealing with this stress now? Are you, you know, shutting down? Are you crying a lot? Are you working too much? Are you avoiding? Are you eating more? Are you exercising too much, too little? You know, all those questions. So that's pretty much step two. It's a big one, but also a piece of that step two is understanding the brain, which is fascinating. It's addiction and sex affairs is kind of an addiction, whether your dopamine, your pleasure seeking hormones kick in. And, you know, it feels good to be in a relationship where you feel totally adored and loved, and maybe the sex is good. And so to recognize that that isn't necessarily an excuse, but it is a factor in what's happening and may have happened in your keeping you in your affair if you stayed in for a while. Then say it out loud. I mentioned that before. You've got to find somebody to say it out loud to. Here's what I did. Here's my story.
And that's step three, is step three, saying it out loud.
Yes, say it out loud.
Okay, cool. Yep.
Yeah. And that sounds simplistic, but whew, that's tough. And the hard part is for couples, when they would come into my office, they were so embarrassed and didn't want to deal with what you experienced, where you saw your friend differently. So they didn't tell, they don't tell people. They often don't tell their family. They often don't tell any friends. And so they're dealing with this secret between the two of them, and they both need, both parties need to turn to somebody and process what's going on and deal with it, because they really can't help each other in that beginning stages of understanding it and coping with all their emotions that are flying around. So that's the challenge.
Yeah, it is. And there's times there when I know I have different friends, and this sounds a bit strange, but I have different friends that I feel I can talk about different mm-hmm. things to.
Yes.
And maybe that's what they're looking for. Somebody, yes. like you say, that's not going to judge, or mm-hmm. not judge too harshly, at least.
Right.
But somebody else there that they can talk to, because, yeah, the more they keep it bottled up and squished up inside them, the more problem it's going to cause.
Well, and the more you lie to yourself.
Yeah.
There's something about the Catholic, I'm not Catholic, but the confessional, you know, there's something about admitting it out loud, I sinned. And there's something about that transitions you to owning it more. And if you keep it secret, you can play a lot of head games that says, no big deal. I'm not hurting anybody. You know, I'm a better parent because I'm, you know, happier, whatever head game you may be doing. So finding the right person is a challenge, and you may need to coach that person. I need you to listen to me. I'm going to share with you my journaling that I'm writing. And you know, that's, you get to say how you feel, because I'm going to say you care about me. So of course you may say, you idiot, or I'm mad at you, or I don't understand, but ask them to, if they can do this, if they can be the listener for you. So, but a therapist would be easier, but.
Well, more professional, and you're going to get a better understanding of it. But I also know too, when you actually speak something out loud, you can hear it in a different way.
Yes.
And I know when I'm doing it with my intuition, and you're talking to somebody, and you may ask a question, and straight away you get that information coming back to you because you've said it out loud.
Yes. Yes.
The way it sort of reflects. And I know I've spoken to friends when I've been doing counseling and things like that, where you sort of go, well, you know, have you tried doing this? And as soon as I've said it, it's like, oh, the words come back at me as if to say, yeah, have you really tried that? You're giving this advice, but are you doing it yourself?
Right.
So speaking it out loud has so many benefits to it. It's really,
it
really important. And one of the easiest ways to hide it is to not speak it out loud.
It is very hard, and that's so hard, because initially when you're telling your story of your affair, it's going to be kind of, the curiosity of people is like, really, how many times did you sleep together, what hotels did you rent, how did you sneak away, you know, you get caught up in the data, like knowing all that, and you have a responsibility to kind of answer that, but that's again not really going to help you grow. And that's the hard part. And that's also the training of how do you say it out loud to your significant other, because I'm saying do this work individually, but meanwhile, you're living perhaps still with your significant other, and you need to tell them something. Mm. You know, you can't just say, yeah, I'm working on this workbook, and I'll talk to you in a couple months from now, let you know how I've done. No, you've got to kind of clue them in. And so you have to learn how to talk about it without getting drug into the details.
Yeah.
So when you talk about it, you're going to talk about yourself. You're going to talk about, wow, I really was having fun. And I didn't think about, you know, all the people that I was cheating on. I didn't think about all the lies I was telling. Or now am I aware of feeling like a terrible person, and I am feeling so much guilt and embarrassment and morose about going out in public. I mean, just that's how to talk about it. So, and to take that further, you know, when it's all around us, I mean, you turn on the TV or there's some celebrity that's marriage is falling apart, or somebody's cheated, or a little, you know, it's just everywhere. I mean, we haven't Remember all that phase we went through with all the Charlie Rose? I mean, these are Americans, but Matt Lauer. I mean, kind of all these broadcasters all of a sudden were exposed for having horrible relationships with their employees, for example, and cheating on their wives, et cetera. And, you know, we're all going, oh, that's terrible. That's terrible. And it is terrible. But who knows what work they've done? Who knows? But, you know, the goal is, if I'm sitting there with my significant other who's cheated on me and I see another expose of another failed celebrity, whatever, I, of course, I'm going to think about it. And I'm going to maybe turn to my spouse who cheated on me and said, ouch, you know, wow, that brings up what you did to me 5 years ago. And you have to learn the skills on how to talk about it without going back into the details. So, yeah, you know, how to say, I'm really sorry, I know. And I look back on how what I did to you 5 years ago, I just hurt that I was so stupid and insincere and distrustful. And, you know, so it's the courage to continually realize that this isn't going to be fixed. We're not going to erase this from your history. Now this is part of who you are, or part of your experiences, and part, hopefully, of your growth of how you become who you like more in the present and future. Yeah. So I keep going off step. But step four is that restitution goals, you know. And one of those is about intimacy. Again, how do I get connected with someone? And there's different kinds of intimacy. There's emotional intimacy, spiritual intimacy, experiential intimacy, sexual intimacy, and there's probably others. But it's being vulnerable enough to experience a closeness with someone. So that means you have to learn how to know yourself and to say it out loud to someone, and truly be curious about another person, truly be interested in what drives them, what's interesting for them, and how to have new ways of connecting together. And so there's like a little quiz on that, on how to get to those different levels of intimacy.
And so in those books, you've got all those little quizzes. So
it's little quizzes, a reflection. It's a kind of a guided journaling book to help kind of like, oh, okay, let me write about that. You know, think about that. And then that's something that you can then share with whoever it is your confidant is. You know?
Okay, All right, again, so we're getting a little bit low on time. So I want to just quickly do the last one, which is step five, which is forgiveness. So unless you've done a lot of this work, the forgiveness, and as the book says, more than sorry. So it's not just about saying sorry, because you can do that as a defense mechanism. Yes. It's about really getting that understanding and then going forward. So what is the fifth step?
Yep. It's the same difference. I'm going to read you one of my example. So my book takes five somewhat real, somewhat fictitious couples as they try to repair their relationship post an affair, some with success, some with not. Okay. Yes. So, and I have them go through all the steps as illustrations. Because sometimes it's easier to talk about other people than ourselves, right?
Yes.
So this is Carlos's letter to his partner, Bruce. I now own up to my affairs and realize my moral code was terrible, and I'm genuinely embarrassed by my behavior. I was only interested in having fun and filling up my ego in such a disgusting way. I've discovered the broken place in me, filled with fear and insecurity. Now I will say no. I pledge I will not return to the double life I led. It embarrasses me when I realize how long I cheated and denied it to myself. I didn't justify it. I just didn't think about it. Now I want to look in the mirror, respect who I am, respect the vow I made to you, and be honest, open, and faithful. I realize my affairs tainted our relationships, even though you didn't know what I was doing. I am sure you sensed a wall to our intimacy. While protecting my secrets, I could not be present with you, impacting our intimacy. I know we can be happy. I will work on being a good individually by continuing to navel gaze. I love you, and I hope you will forgive me enough to continue to build a future together. Things will be different.
Wow.
So that's an apology, right?
Yeah, that's how you get to that stage. That is just glorious.
Yeah.
Wow. And to have it even in writing, it's like it just escalates it more and makes it more feeling, you know, more intimate.
Yeah.
How wonderful. Before we go any further, grab Deb's book. Okay. Oh. Dr. Deborah Miller, More Than Sorry, 5 Steps to Deepen Your Apology After You Have Committed Infidelity. And it's really, really important. If you want to heal those relationships, you want to create intimacy again, back into those relationships, you need to do that. But that's about all we've got time for, Deb. One more last little tidbit you've got to offer.
Just that you deserve it. You deserve to grow from your mistakes. You deserve to give yourself the opportunity to get what you need, and that is more solid, intimate relationships. There's hope out there. Thank you, Jane. Susan, oh, my gosh. Susan, this was just amazing.
That's all right. Everyone does that. That's fine.
I know, your two names, right.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Thank you so much for being on the show, Deborah. And it was lovely to have you. So, yeah, really cool. I better take that little ticker tape off. And I will go into this. Guys, that was really cool. Share, like, subscribe to the podcast. But have a look at the website. That was really amazing, what she put forward. And, again, it made me realize how quick we can judge somebody else for doing something like that. It's really easy to judge. But when you start to get a deeper understanding of it and what they're going through, you start to empathize as well. Yes, they've done something wrong, but yes, they can come back from this and create a beautiful, intimate relationship again. So that is us for this week. I think I've said everything else. If you want, I can't remember what I was going to say. If you want to learn, jump on my website. It's intuitivenature.com.au, an Australian website, and you can grab online courses there and other things there. So that's me for this week. I will say bye for now and see you next week.